Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yo, what's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coming up at 10:30, Martin Jarman, the new athletic director at UCLA. 11 o'clock, Mina Kimes, and then Ben Lyons for our movie review at 11:40. It's brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Man, get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data and 2G for $45 a month, saving you half the cost of big carriers. No contract, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. We'll get to Greg Bergman versus Keyshawn here in just a second. But first, I got to tell you guys, look, number of things we want to get into today, but I want to talk about momentum. And momentum is building. Momentum is building in sports, whether it's the NBA, whether it's the NHL, even within Major League Baseball. As much as there's some infighting going on, I think that there's momentum. And I think that as we head into a holiday weekend, I think we need to focus on the things that are at hand. We all want sports back, but the most important thing for us here is that we all continue to do what's best for each other during this pandemic. Stay safe, stay sound, stay strong of mind, and of course, do what the leaders in our community are telling us to do. Physical distance, wear your masks, all those things. That's all I ask you. Think about everyone else, okay? It's that simple. Because if we do that, we're clearly doing the right thing, and the curve is bending in the right direction, and we will be able to come out of this. Much like sports will help us come out of it. Because that distraction, right? That's coming our way. And I have a real feeling that we are getting closer and closer and closer to it. We've already gotten it in dribs and drabs, right? We've gotten the UFC. We've gotten some golf. We're going to have some golf this weekend. But I know we are headed in the right direction. And little by little, I know it doesn't always feel that way. And I know that sometimes you go up a couple of steps and then you fall down a step or two and then, you know, you keep climbing. It's an ebb and a flow. There's no straight line here. That's not life. So this surely as hell wouldn't be that either. But I do have a real sense from talking to people around sports that there is real momentum. And you should understand that there's hope, that there's real momentum, whether it's in real life or whether it's with just your fun and sports life. And it doesn't mean that big issues don't need to be ironed out. And on the NBA side, there's still some guys that need to be sold. James Harden talking about potentially not playing until things are quote-unquote minimized. I don't know if that's realistic. Much like we talked about with Clayton Kershaw and Mike Trout when we were talking baseball, or Blake Snell. Look, man, if you're waiting for the perfect scenario, there is none. When Charles Barkley was on this show, he said it best. Right? He said, we're just picking from a bunch of bad ideas and we're trying to pick the best bad idea. But what we do have, at least from the NBA's perspective, is you have one of the more thoughtful, understanding, compassionate, empathetic commissioners we maybe have ever had, to be honest with you. He has a true relationship with the players. And even though he flexed a little bit on them and the Players Association about, look, if we're going to do this, we have to do this in one or two sites. We have to do the campus atmosphere. Notice he changed the phrasing from bubble to campus atmosphere, which is smart. That's smart messaging. He did that because he's the guy talking to the health officials every day. He's the guy talking to the White House every day. He's the guy talking to the local governments and the state governments, right? He's the one having the majority of those conversations. So, yes, even though you hear a James Harden maybe needs to be coaxed into this, it doesn't mean that these sports aren't going to happen. Doc Rivers was just on SportsCenter an hour ago and said there is real momentum for this. He said specifically, I think everyone wants to play. We have a shot at it. So do several other teams. He's talking about the Clippers. And any team that does wants to get the season going back. I actually feel like that might be even a little bit of a shot at Harden. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like Harden, while I completely understand if he wouldn't want to play, I think he's going to end up playing because he's a smart guy. We can make fun of him all you want about his playoff stuff, but at the end of the day, James Harden understands that there's not a perfect scenario here. Or at least they will make him understand that there's not a perfect scenario here. And we're going to have a conversation in risk tolerance. That's it. That's what this boils down to. There's going to be some semblance of risk, and how much can you tolerate? Now, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NHL, et cetera, are going to do what's best for everyone in trying to reduce that risk so that there is less of a tolerance that they have to put up with. But there are things that need to be worked out. Brian Windhorst yesterday on SportsCenter.
I don't think Vegas has been ruled out, but for various reasons, I think that the NBA prefers the Disney setup. It's just a matter of whether it all gets worked out. It also is a matter of whether Disney can support all 30 teams, because I think Disney World is going to try to open back up soon. They're not going to have the whole place to themselves. They're going to have a portion of it to themselves. At least that's the concept.
So if that's the case, then you probably need two facilities. You need two spots. Because if Disney's going to start opening up, which I could see, right? Everyone is slowly but surely kind of leaning in that direction. And here, even in LA, we're talking about July 4th, right? So in Florida, there's a real chance that's going to be the case if it won't have been by that time anyway. So, but Disney, much like everyone else, will do it in a smart, respectful, and thoughtful fashion. You're probably not going to be at capacity by any stretch of the imagination if you're any facility, whether you're a theme park, whether you're a stadium or arena, for a long, long time. But you still can find ways to get things moving again. And if that's the case and those things coincide, then you have to do Vegas. I'm not a huge fan of the Vegas thing. I'd prefer one space, but Brian has now just given us information that maybe very few of us actually had. I sure as hell didn't have it. That if Disney was going to be open to some extent, then the NBA would only get a partial. Then, yeah, you have to have two sites to be able to accommodate everyone. Unless you go just playoffs. So that leads me to the next question. What's this going to look like? Are we going to have regular season games? Are we going to have two different sites? So Brian has his information, right? And then you've got the owners who are speaking directly as well, obviously, to Adam Silver. And, you know, you have to understand that these owners are trying to find the best way possible to make this happen for a number of different reasons. Number one, finances. There's no doubt that that's part of this, right? Number two, the integrity of the sport. That's as important as anything. Like, you don't want to forego a season if you don't have to. So the momentum is definitely headed in the right direction. And Brian is talking about it. And Mark Lazary, who's the owner of the Bucks, who's one of those teams that Doc Rivers was alluding to.
We're getting a lot closer. We're going to have a Board of Governors call, and I think it's next Friday, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it then. I think right now the momentum seems to be shifting, and I think we'll have something hopefully within next 6 to 8 weeks we should be playing.
So he thinks they're playing 6 to 8 weeks. You're talking about July 15th. That sounds about right. And then, of course, Lazary, who's the Bucks owner, was on CNBC, as I mentioned earlier, and he discussed the potential of the sites. Here's what he said.
I think it'll literally be one or two sites. I think just to make it easier for everybody, I think it'll probably be two sites. You know, maybe have the West on the Vegas side and have the East on the Orlando side.
I'm trying to figure out how a championship is going to feel under these circumstances.
You know, look at it this way. If you win, it feels great. So, yeah, everybody's going to talk about, well, it was difficult, it was different, it was without fans. Yeah, but then you're still an NBA champion. You're still the champion, and I think the ratings will be through the roof. Everybody's going to want to see it.
Yeah, the ratings are going to be through the roof. People are going to want to see it. And this notion that there's going to be some sort of asterisk next to this. I've talked about this repeatedly. It is the dumbest thing ever to throw an asterisk on this. If anything, this may be more difficult to be able to pull off for a team this season than maybe any other season. And we may have a surprise champion because of the circumstances. Guys can get hurt, right? They've had a layoff. They're going to have a training camp. But what if guys get hurt during training camp? That could change the complexion of the entire league. You know, I'll use Mark Lazary as an example. What if Giannis gets hurt during the training camp? I mean, all of a sudden, the East, people just assumed the Bucks were coming out. Then it's way more wide open. Then who are the Lakers or Clippers or whoever out of the West going to face? So I actually think that the drama will be higher than anything we've ever seen because we sure as hell don't know what to expect. But I also think that another reason the asterisk thing is stupid is there's going to be, I think, genuine joy and even some surprise if we're able to make it through all this and crown another champion. Like, I believe that the sense that people will have will be like, wow, we've, and you should have it. Wow, I can't believe we were able to restart the NBA season and we crowned a champion and it was done in crazy exciting fashion in this, you know, odd scenario where teams are playing, you know, in a more truncated fashion. Like, there's so many things that are going to be thrown at these organizations and these teams that they're going to have to handle that you should absolutely stand up and applaud whoever the hell wins the championship. Now, granted, I know most of you want the Lakers or the Clippers, depending on who your allegiances are, to win the championship. But I just think whoever wins, good Lord, you're going to deserve it. You know, and it's funny because I was like thinking about all this stuff, and I was watching yesterday on NBA TV, they had Lakers-Blazers Game 7 on, and it kind of made me think about this, right? Like what we're dealing with, which is, you know, you're going to have a potential surprise here or there. I don't think that this is going to feel like a regular playoffs. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I remember watching that in real time and going, man, the Lakers are down 20 points. Like, how the hell are they going to win this thing? And then they ended up winning, right? We always talk about the alley-oop, right? Kobe to Shaq, all that stuff. I mean, just Shaq pointing. It's unbelievable. It's really, to watch it again was unbelievable television. Bergman, I'll ask you, as you try to remember that game, you've been a lifelong Laker fan. And, you know, we're clearly going to deal with emotions and surprise and a gamut of emotions here once we do get back to playing because we don't know what to expect. But what was that the game? Like, if you think of all the sports that you've watched in your entire life, is that the game you were most surprised that your team won?
Yeah, I think it probably would be. I can't really think of another one that would be the more surprising right now.
I mean, I guess you were really little when the Kirk Gibson thing happened. I know we talked
right.
about that.
Yeah. Right. I was five, so it wasn't something.
And it was
that,
game one, right? Like, this is game seven. This is also, the stakes are a lot different.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that was just like a memory of that one shot. I remember one thing from the Kirk Gibson game, and that's about it. So yeah, I think that would be the one.
Yeah, I am curious. I'd love to open that up to the audience. Like, what was the game that you were most surprised your team won? 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Coming up next, a Hall of Famer and former Major League Baseball Players Association rep has some advice for these current MLB players. We'll talk about that in just a second. Plus, Bergman versus Keyshawn on the other side as well. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things easier. Help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at Progressive.com. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So how'd it go with Key this morning there, Bergman?
You know, I am now the villain on every single show on this network. So, you know,
nice.
Well.
Yeah. Nice. So, what happened there? Why did you call him egotistical?
No, I didn't call him egotistical. It just became off as that way because I said that to be a number one overall pick, you have to have some sort of ego to yourself. Like, that's just how it has to be. And he took it as I'm egotistical. So I look, however.
Oh, see, that's not the way they framed it when I was talking to them.
No, I was just talking about how being a number one overall pick, and also saying, like, I'm a UCLA fan, and anybody that went to USC. to me is, you know, has a bit of an ego because, you know, that's their USC and I went and I'm a UCLA guy. That's just how that works. But however it works, you know, I'm the villain with you. I'm the villain with Mason in Ireland. And now I'm the villain with Keith. So
I mean,
it just kind of fits.
Is kind of strong. I mean,
okay.
But okay.
The joke is whatever. Not the
joke either. I would say you are, you know.
The traitor.
I don't know. We have to come up with a, maybe the audience can come up with something for you. Like how the best to describe you, Bergman. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. People want to weigh in on the conversation of when your team was most surprised or when what game was it that you were most surprised your team won. We'll get to those calls in a second. By the way, Laura and Greg, did you see this study done in Canada? Hello, Canada. That basically says that according to their study, now it hasn't been peer reviewed, it's just one particular study, but that the, I guess, whatever triggers your body, whatever triggers stuff in your body when you smoke CBD, when you smoke cannabis, particularly CBD, that it helps you, fend off coronavirus. And the studies that they had, it was like, it helped your body fend off coronavirus like up to 60 or 70% more than just the regular person. So I'm going to ask you this. If this is real, and this is something else I'd like to open up to the audience at 877-710-ESPN. I'll start with you, Laura. If you didn't smoke previously, but let's say this study does get peer reviewed, right? And it does help you fend off coronavirus by a percentage as high as 60 or 70%. Do you believe more people who didn't smoke are more likely to smoke if this is proven?
100% yes. I don't smoke and I would smoke. Give it to me. I'll do it. I mean, bring it on. I'm down.
Well, 100%. Luckily it's CBD, right? And CBD is non-psychoactive. So
correct. So you're not getting the pot thoughts. It's just the buzz. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's the relaxation.
So it depends on the CBD. You can get CBD that has zero THC in it, but but for the most part, THC is a factor in CBD.
It also activates it, right? But
yes,
you can have a very small percentage. Like if you can have less than 1%, less than 0.5%. The higher the amount of CBD compared to THC, you know, the less psychoactive it is.
Right. I do not like being high. I don't like the feeling of being high. I haven't smoked in probably 10 to 15 years, but I take CBD daily. It has a teeny tiny bit of THC. I have to take it at night just so I can just go to sleep with it, but that's about it.
Yeah, but do you believe that more people would start smoking if this turns out to be accurate and it gets peer reviewed?
I don't see why not. Shouldn't it become – that'll help make it become federally legal?
It should.
What about being worldwide legal?
Well, I think I don't know what the other countries do. I mean, I know that in Europe, you know, it's touch and go. I don't know what it's like in other countries, so I can't speak to that. I would say that if this study turns out to be true, then I do think it helps the cause. Federally, I think, because my guess is even if you don't smoke, like you'd be like, well, if it helps me and we don't have a vaccine and it's going to help me fend this thing off, then, you know, I'll smoke whatever the necessary amount is.
Takeout's going to go way, way up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's the right thing to do. CBD is kind of like a miracle drug as much as it hasn't been tested just enough just yet, but all it does is help the body. It has a ton of different properties that help your body. So I love CBD. It's an amazing drug.
Yeah, it would be fascinating to see, and I'm curious to see if anyone in the audience who doesn't necessarily smoke, if that would sway them in any way, shape, or form. Let's go to the phones, though. People want to weigh in on some of the conversations we've had, including what was the game you were most surprised your team won. I was referring to watching the Lakers-Blazers Game 7 yesterday on TV. Let's go to Chris in L.A. Chris, what do you got?
Hey, George. For me, it was, I think, 2010 Lakers-Celtics. I believe the Lakers were down in the fourth quarter like 13, 15 points with, you know, 11 minutes left, somewhere around there. So I was pleasantly surprised when they came back on that one.
That is a good one, and that was just recently on TV, too. Chris, thanks for the call, and stay safe. Let's go to Abraham in the OC. What's up, Abraham?
Yeah, I was actually going to say the same game, Lakers-Celtics, because we were playing so bad, and the Celtics were very physical.
And Kobe was struggling in that game. Remember, Kobe struggled in that game.
Yeah. only made six shots, six out of 24, and we only had 34 points first half, and that was very surprising to see. And happy 10-year anniversary. I'm so glad we came back and we won that, because it was going to be two final losses in 3 years, and that would have, you know, been horrific. So,
right, and to the Celtics on top of that, Abraham, and thank you for the call. Stay safe. That would have made it even worse. Mike is in Vegas listening on the app. What's up, Mike?
Hey there. Happy Memorial Day, and I agree. I was at that game. We were fortunate enough to have a table up in the suite level A, and one of the regular ladies that went to the game, sat at the table, she was crying her eyes out. This was a game seven. We were down by 13 late in the game, and we have to give props to Meta World Peace and to Sasha Bujicic for
Making those free throws, cold off the bench. Yeah.
And if I can throw in one other game, being from Pittsburgh originally, I was just not even 6 years old at the time. 1961 World Series, another game seven. Bill Mazeroski run to beat the dastardly Yankees.
Yeah, the shot heard around the world.
Total run score was in the seven game was like Yankees 67 and the Pirates maybe 25. But it was a chip for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and those are my two games. And
thanks
again.
Thank you, Mike. Stay safe. Appreciate it. Let's go to Josh in Ventura. Josh, what do you got?
Hey, George. I got when Robert Horry hit the shot, you know,
go-ahead
layups, and then boom, out to a big shot, Rob. And, man, I ran around the house crying. I was 9 years old. I was crying my eyes out.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's crazy. That's awesome, man. Josh.
Also, cannabis, I smoke every day, but I'm going to smoke even more now knowing that it's going to defeat COVID.
Yeah, go get some CBD, man. Go get some CBD. Josh, thank you. Stay safe, buddy. Let me go to Grady in Fullerton. Grady.
Hey, George. Happy Friday, sir. Hey, if you're talking about something for Bergman, it's like what the Dark Knight says. You either die a hero or you see yourself live long enough to be a villain.
There you go, Bergman. There you go, Grady. Thanks, Grady. Appreciate it.
By the way, Brian Kamenetsky texted and said that I'm the foil. Is that the right
foil
way to put it?
That's a perfect word to describe you. You're a foil. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Foil. Not villain. Villain is harsh.
Yeah, villain is pretty harsh. I'll take whatever it is. I don't care.
Foil is fun. Let's go to I like being the foil. I have no problem being a foil. I love being a foil, to be honest with you. Jason in Woodland Hills. You should embrace your inner foil. Go ahead, Jason.
I'm going to be the foil to Greg Bergman right now. Predating COVID, there were multiple studies suggesting that cannabinoids suppress the receptors that COVID-19 can grab onto. So technically, if you're using CBD or THC, you have a better chance, if these studies are correct, by the 60 or 70% to fend it off better. There are multiple studies that predate this by a couple of years that show that it does suppress the PMPRSS2 receptor and the ACE2 receptor, and those are two primary targets for the COVID virus.
Wow. Awesome, man. Thank you so much, Jason. Appreciate the info. Stay safe. Look at that. Bergman, smoke it up, baby.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Go download Weed Maps on your phone and, figure it out.
Laura, where I go. The Green Cross.
Okay.
There's green crosses everywhere. I know where to go.
There's plenty of green crosses everywhere. Yeah. I mean, I live, down in the South Bay. You go on PCH and you can find them. If you not like where John Ireland lives near the Ivory Tower. They'd never have that in Manhattan Beach or, whatever. You got to go in the other parts of the South Bay, outside of the Manhattan Beach area. There's plenty of those green crosses. Thomas and Gardena. What's up, Thomas?
Hey, how y'all doing this morning? Happy Friday, gentlemen. And
yes, sir.
I just want to say, Bergman, you stood 10 toes down with Deshaun, man. You know what I mean? You did that. I like the way you held your own with him. But the game I'm most surprised my team won was the inaugural CFP championship, Ohio State defeating Alabama in the playoff.
Oh.
Yeah, I had no idea, and I actually didn't have cable at the time, so I'm watching the game cast on my phone. And then when I saw that last interception, I just ran around screaming OH in my courtyard. People just started running outside. You know, I don't know what I did. Nobody knows what OH means, but I lost my voice for a couple of days after that. But was most surprised we won.
That's funny. Thanks, Thomas. Appreciate it, buddy. Thank you. That's hilarious. I love that, the reaction stuff. So I mentioned earlier there is a Hall of Famer before we go. We're going to talk to Martin Jarman, the new AD at UCLA, here in a couple minutes. He's going to join us at 10:30. But I mentioned a Hall of Famer and former MLBPA player rep had some advice for current players. Tom Glavine, we talked about it recently, right? That he did a print interview where he was like, look, the players need to understand that they're not doing themselves any favors by doing this stuff. Laura, I know we have some sound from Tom Glavine. So I want you to be able to play the sound that he had with Golic and Wingo. Let's use the one where it says that the players are easy to blame. Let me hear that.
I just think at the end of the day, regardless of what the issues are, the players are just much easier to blame than the owners. And I heard it all the time in 94 during the strike, even though we didn't ask for any more money. We were just asking that the market or the free market state in which the game operated under at that time stayed that way. And basically all everybody said was, you know, the players are greedy and how much more money do they want? So, it's just, they're just an easy target. Now, having said that, I'm not saying that the Players Association and the players should cave in on anything they don't believe in. I think they have 100%, are 100% right in being concerned, A, about the safety protocols that certainly have been discussed and will continue to be discussed. And I think they have a 100% right to be concerned about a revenue sharing proposal because that was, in essence, the whole fight in 1994.
And the reality is, to his point, you have to just have those negotiations, at least the financial ones, behind the scenes, at the negotiation table, not in the media. That's a losing proposition every single time. And also, if you're the Major League Baseball Players Association, you have to be a little more open-minded because of the reasons he illustrated. Glavin's right. No matter what, you've already been painted as the bad guy. So because of that, you've already lost some ground. You don't have the high ground here anymore. And it's going to be hard to regain the high ground. I was watching Revenge of the Sith yesterday, Star Wars 3 with my kid. And remember Anakin? He's got the low ground, and Obi-Wan Kenobi tells him, you can't win, Anakin, I've got you. I've got the high ground. Then Anakin tries to flip over him, and then, spoiler alert, he chops his legs off, and he ends up, you know, burning or whatever in the lava. Well, that's this. The owners have done that to them. They've got the high ground. So the Major League Baseball Players Association is going to have to be a little more open-minded to this. All right, coming up next, how does UCLA factor into the equation here in Southern California? What do they got to do to get back on top in basketball? How do they get going in football? We'll talk to their new AD, Martin Jarman, next in 3 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. If you miss any one of our interviews throughout the week, check out the entire interview on demand section of the Sedano Show podcast on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you find your podcast. Brought to you by Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases. What's in your wallet? It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Martin Jarman, the new athletic director at UCLA, is kind enough to join us here. Martin, thank you so much for taking the time. What has this whole process been like for you? I would imagine you're not even in LA yet.
Well, thanks for having me. The process, in a word, has been a whirlwind. It's been exciting, exhausting, but and virtual by and large. So very different, but I'm excited that it turned out the right way, and I'm the guy.
Yeah, we're excited for you as well. And yeah, that was going to be my follow up. Is that I would imagine you've never conducted any sort of interview, or whether you're conducting it or being on the receiving end of the interview, in the same fashion that you've had to conduct these.
I hope this is the first and the last time that I have to interview strictly on Zoom. It was an interesting process as far as the connection through Zoom and all virtual. But everybody I met through the process was nice. It's just, you know, it's a new normal for us all with everything going on.
Was it even a little nerve-wracking because it wasn't going to be in person?
Yes, it was. You know, the first time you really think about it, you're worried about little things like, you know, with Zoom, you're looking at the camera, but everybody else is on the squares, and so you kind of have to find that balance. And, you know, it's just a different thing, and it's so important. You usually don't have that much riding on an interview that is in that format that you're just not used to doing. So it's just something new and different for everybody, even the people on the committee. So, you know, from that standpoint, it was different. But, you know, connecting with people is connecting with people, no matter what the medium is. And I really liked and enjoyed the UCLA folks and what they were talking about and telling me how special UCLA was. And so that's why I got really excited. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, well said, certainly. And yeah, the Zoom thing about looking at the squares as opposed to the camera. I mean, listen, welcome to life in TV. We do it all the time, too. We always have to balance looking at our subject and looking at the camera. So, you know, if you ever need to do a little TV, Martin, we now you're ready to roll.
Well, you're a pro with the around the horn and everything else. So, you know, you've got a lot of practice with it.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also have to deal with all my colleagues who are not necessarily always so nice on shows like that, too. So it's a little snippier on Around the Horn than those interviews I'm sure you were doing. So Martin Jarman, who's joining us here now, the UCLA athletic director. Before I get into just kind of UCLA, right, and like your thoughts on that and the Pac-12 and just kind of your experience in the ACC and even the Big Ten, we were just having like a fun fan discussion here because of just everything that's been going on. And I'm curious to get your thoughts as a sports fan. Like, we were talking about like the hope of getting sports back, right, and trying to do it in a safe environment. But it just kind of led me to believe, like, as you're looking at sports now, we're watching a lot of old games. And, you know, I was talking about hope. And I ran into a game yesterday on NBA TV where it's like the Lakers against the Blazers, like 2000, game 7. Shaq and Kobe, they're down 20 points in the fourth quarter, and they came back to win and go to the NBA Finals. So I was asking people, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Like, was there a game where Martin Jarman, the fan, watched and was most surprised that his team ended up winning? Was there a moment that you remember rooting for a team and you were like, oh my God, I can't believe my team won that game?
The first one that just came to mind. So my junior year in college, I played basketball at UNC Wilmington. We made the NCAA tournament for the first time in school history. I was a captain on that team my junior year in 2000. 2001, we lost in the tournament championship game, so we didn't go to the NCAA. We went to the NIT, and at that time, the CAA was a one team league, one bid league. So the year after I finished, UNC Wilmington got to the NCAA tournament as a 13 seed, and they played against SC, a 4 seed, in the first round. That game was tight, and at that time, we had never advanced past the first round, and Coach Jerry Wainwright, my coach, he always made the goal for the program, win the conference, get to the NCAA tournament, and the ultimate goal was always win one game in the NCAA tournament, advance one round in the tournament. So I'm watching that game in grad school, and it goes to overtime. And I didn't even think that we would make it to overtime. And then in overtime, we got stronger, and we end up beating SC. And that was one of the biggest upsets, you know, up until that time, 2002. And so I remember in regulation thinking, you know, we played so well, we were so close, and we're not going to pull this thing out. And then by and large, we got it done. So that was probably the one. It's always nice to beat SC, and that was great.
So take me back there as you're watching this as a fan. Like, what was your reaction? Are you running around? Are you screaming? Are you fist pumping? What are you doing there?
Oh, no, I'm all nerves. I'm on the floor. I'm on the couch. A turnover, I like fall down, and I can honestly tell you when we won that game, it was bittersweet because, you know, part of me was jealous of that moment because we had just almost gotten there the year before. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, guys, why couldn't you have just done this the year before? But then the other part of me, I started crying because I was so happy. I was so proud of those guys and what they did for the university and that community in Wilmington. That I fell on the floor. It was almost like MJ and Jordan's, you know, when he's on the ground with the trophy crying.
Yeah.
That's how I was in grad school in my apartment. I was just bawling, crying because I was so happy for those guys.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Martin Jarman, new athletic director at UCLA, joining us here. And look, your constituency is going to hope that you continue to beat USC, right? Like, I think that is the apropos part of the story here. So look, let's talk about UCLA and its programs. I guess once you were named AD, who was your first call to at UCLA?
Dan Guerrero. Dan is the current athletic director, been there 18 years, and in college athletics, he's a giant. I mean, what he has done for student athletes for years, and as an alum at UCLA, he's a legend in our business. So I called him and just told him it was an honor to be able to follow him, and I wanted to learn from him and have a smooth transition, and he was so gracious, and he was happy because I've known him for over a decade, so we've known each other, and it just is nice when the person that's in that chair that understands the nuance and the challenges is excited for you and wants to really help you start off on the right foot and get off on the right track. So he was my first call, and he was helpful. He said, "Hey, I'm going to be as helpful in to your process as you want me to be." And I said, "Dan, look, we're going to do this together." And so he was awesome. He was my first call.
What were the conversations like with some of your coaches, or Chip Kelly? Let's start with him. Have you had a chance to chat with him?
Yeah, Chip was my next call. I called Chip and caught him, and we had a great conversation, and he was just telling me how excited he was. And, you know, he had kind of done his research on me as my name leaked in the process, and I certainly was doing the same thing about him. And, you know, the one thing we both agreed on is, you know, we have to be locked in together, and I didn't want him feeling like he's on an island and he's going to have an athletic director that's going to do everything we can to push this thing forward. So we had a great conversation, and that was really positive for me to be able to connect with him early on as soon as I was named and got it done to let him know that I'm here to help.
Now, do you know who he spoke to about you? And clearly you would know who you spoke to about him. Could you share that with us?
I don't know who all he spoke to, but I spoke to Jeff Hafley. Jeff Hafley's the head football coach here at Boston College, and I hired him in December, and he worked with Chip. He was on Chip's staff at the 49ers. So Jeff knows him well, and that was really positive because Jeff, the first thing he said is, "Oh, you and Chip, you're going to work well together," and so that's just really good to hear. So Jeff is the one I called. I don't know who all Chip called. I mean, Chip probably knows a whole lot of people in the business and the industry. So that was exciting. And I also called Mick Cronin. I called Mick and got his voicemail, and he texted me back, and that was funny. So we've been texting a little bit.
Yeah, we had Mick on recently. He's an interesting dude. He's pretty cool. Yeah, he's intense, though. He's intense. I don't know how much you know about him, but he is very intense. I like that about him.
You know, I watched his Cincinnati teams, and they were always hard-nosed, guard, play defense, play hard, win the right way. So I like what his Cincinnati teams were. I really didn't get to see UCLA last year, but I know what his teams represent, and he's hard-nosed, and I love it.
Martin Jarman, the UCLA AD, joining us here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. Have you kind of had this discussion? I know Mike Bone sent you a congratulatory message as well. Do you get the sense? I don't know how familiar you are with Southern California. So excuse me, I'm not trying to be indelicate here by any stretch of the imagination. But do you get the sense how important the two teams here in LA are not only to just the Pac-12, but just West Coast sports being validated in general? Do you get that sense just kind of talking to people?
I'll tell you, I've gotten that sense a lot more in the past week. I do understand the importance of both UCLA and SC being strong, not only for the LA market, but also for the Pac-12, and quite frankly, for college athletics. College athletics is better when UCLA and SC are doing well. And so I do understand that. I have a better sense of that now, and I'm excited to get there and lean into that and make sure I do everything I can to help us move forward and represent the right way.
What do you make of this notion? It's become like a prevailing notion in the media. I don't necessarily buy into it, but this notion that the Pac-12 is behind the other Power 5 conferences. As someone who, look, you were in the Big Ten, you were the AD at an ACC school. Like, what do you make of that notion or that narrative that's out there?
I think that narrative is false. It depends, first of all, there are many aspects of a championship program and what you're looking at an athletics department or program. You know, I just know at UCLA, for example, 118 championships, national championships. That's second in the country. I mean, that's winning at an elite level. As far as the Pac-12, I'm not as familiar with the Pac-12. I've been in the ACC the last 3 years and the 15 years before that in the Big Ten. So I have to really hit the ground running and learn a little more just about the Pac-12. I haven't really fully been briefed yet, but I'm excited to lean in and dive in and learn more just about how we operate and what those resources are and what kinds of opportunities we have as a conference to move forward.
What can you take from your time in the ACC, things that they did as an overall conference that you feel like would play well potentially in any conference, but specifically the Pac-12 now that you're here?
I think that's the beauty of shared diversity of experience. You know, with my 15 years in the Big Ten and 3 years in the ACC, what you do is you learn and you listen, and there are things that you might be able to add at the table that a perspective that others may not have because they've been in the same conference. So I'm looking forward to really getting around the table with the Pac-12 and my colleagues, the other ADs, to listen and learn about what we're doing as a conference, what they're doing as institutions, and also to provide value or perspective that may be different. I've seen it certainly in the ACC with the infusion of newer athletic directors that came in from different conferences, and diversity makes you better. You know, it really does. So I hope that I can just make our conference a little better with my different perspective and background coming from the ACC and the Big Ten.
You mentioned diversity, and I know you've answered this question before, I'd love for the audience to hear it. Like, you are the first Black athletic director at UCLA. That is certainly something that I think deserves plenty of recognition, and I'm happy that it's you, and I'm happy that it's someone young on top of the fact that it's someone who's a minority, as someone who's young myself. But what does that mean to you just when you hear it? Like, have you had a chance to kind of wrap your head around that?
You know, I certainly appreciate the historical perspective and the moment as far as becoming the first Black African-American AD at UCLA. But I long for those days where that's not even a conversation, that I'm not the first at Boston College, I'm not the first at UCLA. Because the reality is there have been many athletic directors and executives in sports that have come before me that are Black that have made it easier for me to. You know, whether it's at UCLA or somewhere else, there's so many giants that have come before me that it's humbling, and it really is. And I do understand the importance to others, especially ones that look like me or don't look like me, quite frankly, whether it's I'm young, whether it's I'm Black or whatever it may be. You know, I tend to think of myself, I'm just a kid from Fayetteville, North Carolina that's gotten the opportunity and maximized the most out of each opportunity that comes my way. So I understand the perspective, the historical, I appreciate it, but quite frankly, I just wish that, you know, one of these days we're not talking about being the first, and that's not the headline. More the headline is my experiences and the things that we've been able to accomplish before that have led me to this moment.
Well said. Martin Jarman joining us here, UCLA AD. All right, let's have some fun here. All right, we did all the serious stuff. Let's have some fun. You're a kid from Fayetteville, North Carolina. You played college basketball. What did you make of The Last Dance? How into it were you?
Wow, I was very into it, still very into it, but then this process picked up in the last 7 to 10 days, so I have not seen the last two episodes.
Oh.
So that is on the docket for this weekend, episode 9 and episode 10.
All right, spoiler alert, he beats the Jazz again, okay? Just letting you know, sorry. Yeah, I don't know if I didn't mean to spoil it for you. What else does Martin Jarman watch? Like, take me inside your home when there's no sports. What's on? What's streaming? What are you watching on TV? What do you like to watch to just unwind and relax?
Well, it changes, but I would tell you right now, I just started Ozark not too long ago on Netflix, so I'm probably 7 episodes in. Finishing up Handmaid's Tale.
Oh,
got about 2 episodes left in season 3 of that. And then my favorite show that I think I'm going to, if I have the time, it just depends on if I have the time, but I may rewatch Mad Men. I love Mad Men. A big Mad Men fan, so I might start rewatching that on Netflix.
Okay, I asked this question of some of our guests yesterday. Who is the best fictional American president in a TV on a TV show or in a movie? If you had to pick one, who is your person?
Wow, that's a tough question. Oh my gosh, I don't know. That's like that's probably the toughest question you've asked me. I don't know. I'm not sure. Who do you think?
See, there's a lot of different people you can go with. I like Andrew Shepard, which is the Michael Douglas character in American President. You don't get a lot of rom-coms with presidents. But if you want to go tough guy, Harrison Ford in Air Force One is a good one. Dennis Haysbert in 24 was a president. Selina Myers on Veep was a president. She eventually became the president. Martin Sheen in The West Wing. Like, there's a Independence Day, Bill Pullman. Like, you can go a bunch of different routes here.
Yeah, see, you know way more than me. I knew like two of those. Harrison Ford, you can't go wrong with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, well, especially he tells the terrorists to get off his damn plane. I mean, like that's 90s action right there. Martin Jarman joining us here, the UCLA athletic director. Martin, thank you so much for the time. Hopefully once you get to L.A. and, you know, things are a little more normal, we can have you on again, and maybe we can even have you in studio at some point and chat with you and get to know you a little better. Stay safe, you and yours, and thanks again for taking the time.
I'm going to hold you to that. Love to get back on, and you do the same. Stay safe, stay sane, and we'll see you soon.
All right, take care. There he is, Martin Jarman, the athletic director at UCLA, with us here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. That was fun. That was really fun. This segment brought to you by our friends at Navy Federal Credit Union, where they have one mission: to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Mina Kimes is going to join us in a couple minutes. We're going to switch gears and talk some football. We got a lot of things to unpack there from Martin's interview. I thought he was fantastic. But there are a couple of things that we need to address before Mina Kimes comes on, including the NFL looking to make a big change to a long-time rule. And soccer in South Korea getting a little crazy. We'll tell you about that in 3.5 minutes.